brilliant beauties, you beautifully reformed perfectionists. I'm Nikita Rinth-Bigpen, excited to create this space away from the glorified hustle and bustle and grind that we all have, and welcome this potent human to play with us today on the Lazy Overachiever, Amber Dawson. She is a woman after my own heart. For those of you who are unfamiliar with me and the show, I come from trauma specialist background, psychotherapist, and all the ways we play in the clinical plane. And Amber is such an aficionado in the same space, which is why I love her goodness so much. She's a psychologist, a couples therapist, and the host of Relationship Psych, the podcast, which I have to say is very amazing. If I do say so myself, I have been following her for quite some time. She happens to be very passionate in her advocacy of helping couples create intimate, loving, peaceful, and long-lasting relationships. Can you tell why I wanted to play with her today? Amber, welcome to the TLO. How are you today?
I am excited to be here, doing well today. It's a beautiful summer day, and going to hear this in the fall, but at the time of this recording, it's a beautiful summer day and the bright sunshine totally lifts my mood. So we're starting off in a good place.
Yes, I love that so much. It's a little cloudy on our end, so I got the extra sunlight lamp happening to make sure that I don't go into that dark space where we're like, we need some more light, mama. We need some more light. So I appreciate your smile brightening up everything for us today. Oh, thanks. I would love for you to tell everyone just a little bit about why you decided to become a relationship specialist.
Yeah, so that's like a super long-winded version, but I'll give you the Cole's notes and then you can tell me if you want more. So when I was, 23-ish years old, my brother went into long-term addiction treatment. Mm-hmm. And if you lived in the family home, you had to be part of treatment. And I still lived in the family home. At first, I thought this was stupid and I was perfect and everything about me was fine. And why did I need to be part of treatment? Because obviously he was the problem. And then we went into treatment. And it took me a few months to figure out where I was going to live, find a place to live, sort out all those arrangements so I could stop being part of treatment.
Yeah.
While I was part of treatment, though, this treatment center had a high requirement of siblings. It was about 12 hours a week, which was fairly intensive. And I started to realize that the family disease of addiction had impacted me. Mm-hmm. I started to realize that perhaps I wasn't perfect. And I started to realize that maybe I too needed some help. But that had not occurred to me before. I thought, he's the problem. He's the problem in our family. He's the problem in my life. If he's fixed, I'll be better. It wasn't true. So by the time I finally got a place set up and all these things, the universe aligned where I couldn't move out. And I was so grateful because I wanted to be part of this treatment. So I went through addictions treatment and it was family treatment. And at the same time, I was doing an undergraduate degree in psychology, not because I wanted to be a psychologist, just because my parents told me if I didn't go to school, they were going to take away my car. So
incentive.
Yeah, totally. So I was doing this undergrad in psychology and here I was as in family treatment. And I then graduated my undergrad in psychology and I went and did a master's in marriage and family therapy. And initially my initial work was in the family side of things. I was really interested in how addiction impacted family systems, how addiction impacted siblings, being a sibling and things like that. But then I started to move along in relationships. I got married, I got divorced 10 months later, and I thought, wow, that's not how I thought that was gonna go.
Right.
And I realized through my family system, through some of the dysfunctions that had happened in my life, through the trauma of addiction, I had some issues. I was very afraid of being abandoned. I was very, if someone even touched a substance, I could be highly reactive. And I realized I maybe needed some work on relationships. So then I dove into myself and the relationship space. I had already had formal training in that area. And as my attention personally shifted, my interest in the academic area shifted. And it just so happened that my caseload in that time without intention, like I was always kind of seeing couples because that was part of my work. But as my intention shifted and as I did a deep dive, that's then where my passion kind of fell in and began to lie. So then over the time, I really segued into relationships and couple relationships being the thing that became important to me because I learned through my history, through my backstory, that I was not well equipped to be in a couple relationship and I need to make some changes. And then I just came to love working with other couples who have got, you know, similar stories and also vastly different stories. But how can I help them and give them skills and tools to make the relationship that they want to work? And today I'm happily married. I adore my second husband because he had to do a little work between one and two. And then, you know, husband two, we have had to do a lot of work together. He's just the love of my life. And I'm so grateful that I went through everything that I went through because now I get this amazing, beautiful love that is solid and strong. And it's not that it's disagreement free or problem free, but I adore him and he adores me. And that's through the work we've done. And I know that I literally had to go to the research about relationships to figure out how to do relationships and then learn how to apply that to my relationship in a non like, now we're going to do this clinical thing kind of way, because that wouldn't feel very good. And I just love giving that to other people. So that's the Coles Notes of how I ended up here.
Well, I love it. I'm glad you didn't take anything else out of it. It makes so much sense. And for everyone who's watching this and listening to this, I know you can think of your own journey in your current industry and in your current career and how many personal things were happening in your life that might have, you know, helped sway you a little bit into the direction that was really meant to be your space versus what you thought you were going to do, even if it was this, you know, non-incentive, no one was threatening to take your car away from you, but you had an incentive to do one thing and you felt aligned with something else that was also shaping what I say is the person inside the professional. And you were literally living that out loud in your various stages of your relationship, including your relationship with yourself, which I think is pivotal. And I honor your vulnerability. Thank you for sharing that because it does matter. And people are always putting experts in whatever field on a pedestal, thinking that we too don't have challenges in whatever our expertise area is, but it's why we have a network of other experts that we can go to. Mama has been to marriage counseling, okay? I've also been to individual therapy for multiple years for my own trauma as a trauma specialist. I think it's really important that people hear that and they understand it doesn't make you weak or less or insignificant on any level. It actually makes you stronger when you can identify for yourself that, you know, I'm not as perfect as I thought I was at 23 when I thought I had all the answers, and or even 35 or 55, like regardless of where you as the listener are in your stage of your journey right now, we need other people and we need them to help us balance our perspectives sometimes, let alone whatever is going on in our life, which brings me to, you know, the theme of this show is all about, you know, our witty kind of play on lazy. We truly do not mean people be in a space where you hide under your blanket for 6 weeks at a time and you don't come out to play or to do your purpose or to walk in and live and breathe. We want you to honor your need for rest and recalibration as much as you honor your need to dominate any obstacle that is in your way of applying your purpose out in the future. And as an academic, as a clinician, as a wife, as, I don't remember, are you a mama too? Do you have a baby?
At the time of this recording, I am pregnant. And at the time it is released, I may have a baby.
Oh, okay. And a mama to be, like all of it. You are wearing quite a few hats. So I would imagine in this hour when your body specifically is demanding that you pay extra special attention to it, that you've created some space for laziness in the way that we mean it, you know, that tongue-in-cheek way, to make sure that you don't create a codependent relationship with your ambition and not really honor your truest need for balance.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does that look like for you these days? Like, how would you say, and it's a little, and I just remembered as you said it, I'm like, she sure did tell me that she was pregnant. Like, as I'm thinking about it, because you can't tell with the beautiful top that you have on, you just can't even see your bambino pushing out.
Just under the video.
How would you define laziness for you, like the way that you look at it these days? And I don't mean the negative kind of dictionary way, but just when you're like, I feel the need to be lazy, like what does that look like for you?
For me, it's usually permission to be in peace, permission to do nothing, permission to recharge. And that was a foreign concept to me. So at this stage, for example, the first trimester of my pregnancy was, I mean, I'd heard about morning sickness. I had heard about being tired, but I'm not a napping variety of person.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, I got to like week 7 of my pregnancy and all of a sudden I might sleep for 7 to 9 hours at night, but I needed to sleep 1 to 4 more hours in the day. Yeah. I was like, I wasn't expecting that. And I had all these dreams and ambitions for what I'm trying to do in my career this year that I thought I was going to be able to achieve before the baby came. I quickly learned that that was not going to happen because my body was powering down and I had, like, I could not keep my eyes open. So it's always been a version of rest, recharge, relax, like do a pleasurable thing. That is my version of, air quotes, lazy. But this season in particular, it's been a lot of sleeping or just reading or just, I've been walking a lot, but it's permission to do the thing that is not productive.
Yeah.
Essentially, because I grew up in a life of productivity equals purpose equals that's my value. And I've had to learn that even if I'm not being productive, I still have value. And that is perfectly fine. And in fact, if I take time, I mean, aside from this time in pregnancy, I'm way less productive than I used to be. But prior to getting pregnant, what I learned was if I just sat back, relaxed, enjoyed a couple hours each day, I was just as productive or more productive. I just didn't feel crazy inside. I felt normal and balanced and centered and at peace. So, you know, it changes through the seasons. What brings me peace? What brings me relaxation? But that was something that I did not have until a few, just like not that long ago, maybe 7-8 years ago was when I really started to allow a bit more rest, relaxation. People call it balance. Into my life because I was pretty opposed to those kinds of concepts and terms.
No, I love that. And when you said peace, like I felt goosebumps. A really good colleague of mine, Uwe Dockhorn, who's a German relationship therapist, actually, he talks about goosebumps on your body all the time. And I got goosebumps when you were saying permission to have peace, like just giving myself that. And I immediately had this visceral experience in my body when you said it, because that's the goal, right? Like I'm a balance and relationship advisor. So of course I love all things balance. By the way, you and I have talked about the formula of your truth of what you really want over the boundaries you create to achieve that as a reality. But bigger than that is peace and having that be the thing that anchors you back when you are a little bit tilted into overachiever mode and might not be listening to your body as much. You have the blessing of having a little person, a parasite inside of you saying, you gonna learn today. You gonna sit down and take that nap, right?
Yes. No,
right. But before that and after, once your body, you know, 15, 18 months after when your body fully recovers from labor and all of it, and you're past your postpartum space all the way, when you're 2 years out from now and you don't have that reminder, assuming that you don't have another bambino growing inside there 2 years from now, because I'm not pushing that on you, girl. I'm letting you have this experience and be in the moment. But what will be your anchor back to the piece then, like to remind you, like, this is important for me to create my version of balance and honor my lazy?
Yeah. So to think forward and to think about how I will honor that, I need to think back.
Yeah.
So as part of my story of thinking I was perfect, as the addiction progressed in my sibling, and I thought in my head, if I could be more good, if I could do more, if I could achieve more, I could show them what would be possible and then maybe they would be fine. It turns out it doesn't work like that. I created a lot of resentment. but that was in my head, one of the things I could do. Yeah. And then in my family system, because my brother got so much attention, negative attention, I felt often quite invisible. And one of the only ways I was seen was to achieve something great so I could get the accolade or the pat on the head. And then but the bar kept getting higher and higher of what I had to achieve to get the pat on the head because there was just so much chaos in my home.
Yeah.
So I basically learned from a young age, at fault of no one, do all the things, drive yourself to an anxious meltdown, because you will then get rewarded with, you did a good job, or we're proud of you, pat on the head, and I wasn't invisible for a second.
Right.
So I was highly motivated by that. But in the midst of that, I didn't know this at the time. I didn't have a language for it, but I couldn't fall asleep at night because I was worried about so many different things, whether that was school or my family or my friends, or if people liked me, or if I was ever going to find love. Then, you know, as I got a little bit older, it transitioned to, if I was super busy and dysregulated all day, I started binge eating on all the food because I was so out of a window of what a person can tolerate in their world, and they needed to calm down. So I started eating everything, and I would go through rapid cycles of eating way too much food, gaining tons of weight, and then the shame and the self-doubt and the self-hate, because I just felt so out of control.
Yeah.
And if I remember how bad I felt when my life was unbalanced, it is really easy to go, holy crap, I never want to feel that way again.
Yeah.
Ever. And people used to talk to me about balance, and I'd be like, that's dumb. Who needs balance? Like, I don't need that. I can do all the things. But then I'd go and eat like all the food and feel just absolutely insane. But I do it at night in secret, and it would be my secret, except you could see it on my body. And just have all that shame. So today, or when I'm not pregnant, I get to live in a body that I feel comfortable in.
Yeah.
I get to live in a mental space where I don't have anxiety and I have trouble sleeping at night. I get to live in a space that feels energetically good for me. I feel at peace, you know, most of the time, not always, but like usually. And I'm a person that likes to push, like, how much can I handle before I feel a little crazy? So, you know, I might take on just too much sometimes and have to swing myself back. But to be mindful about it going forward, I just kind of go back and I'm like, okay, that was awful. And I truly never want to live that way again because of how emotionally terrible I felt inside.
Yeah.
Because I learned you don't have to feel emotionally terrible. You can feel peaceful and calm and content and energized most of the time, not always, but like generally most of the time. So if I go forward and I think about this sometimes already, like, what will my mornings be like when I have a baby? How many clients can I take on before I'm at capacity? What will it look like to continue to work exercise into my day? How will I see my friends? And of course, like, I don't know the answer to all of those things because I don't have the baby yet. And I hear it's a lot harder than one thinks. But I know that I need it, or there will be emotional and behavioral consequences to me not taking care of myself. So behavioral consequences could be, I am prone and in a time of stress to want to binge eat everything, and I don't like how that makes me feel.
Right.
When I am under stress, I also like to yell at my husband, who doesn't like that very much. My husband is the most important thing to me in the world. I adore him. And he is a lovely, wonderful man who bothers me from time to time, but does not deserve the wrath of me screaming at him for whatever thing he's done. You know, he doesn't deserve, at times I could be like, you know, kind of abusive with my words.
Right, right.
And when I step back and I go, holy crap, I want to protect that man, and I would like to keep a relationship with him forever, so I can't treat him that way. And so to do that, to be regulated enough to recognize that, I don't know, whatever he did, I can talk to him about it in a neutral voice, if not calm.
Yeah.
I don't have to scream my head off. To have that kind of thought and to be able to regulate my emotions enough, I can't be super busy, because you need to regulate to, I mean, I can be busy, but I have to stay within the zone of what I can handle, or I'm going to be not so to him, basically. That's not a clinical term.
We like it.
Yeah. And so it's about, for me, just recognizing, if I don't take care of myself, I show up in a productive but maladaptive version of myself. I can achieve all the things, but I'll destroy my relationships and my self-confidence and my self-worth in the process.
Yeah.
And that's not worth it for me.
A 1,000%. And you enlightened so many different areas that I don't think a lot of people pay attention to when you think about just giving yourself time to power down so that you can power up, and you can power up in a more efficient and more effective way for the actual productivity itself. Your innovation is better. You see better, you hear better, you're more attuned more, but you're also still soft. And you get to be soft for the female specifically, and for the female embodiment, for the people who want to embody more of that. And I know I have a lot of power couples that struggle with that because they're so ambitious and overachievers and amazing at all they do. They struggle with being soft. And when they want to be soft and lean into it, the other person, the partner, has not been trained to acknowledge the softness that they want at that time, because they're like, I'm used to you climbing the trees, right? Like, and throwing babies. Like, I'm used to you being in a whole different level of energy, but you want me now, who hasn't been trained to this new way of being that you really want to embrace, to respect your softness, when that's not actually what you've been showing me that you want. Because to your point, Amber, when you're not regulated and you're so hard, is the I'm trying to like purposely not use clinical terms, when you're just like hard and you're in the zone. I know how I get. When I'm fixated on finishing something, my husband better not come behind me and try to kiss a neck or touch a hip or doing it, because I'm like, you know, I'm rigid. I'm hard. You're
tense, on edge. Like, get away from me.
Yes. Like, I'm trying to be like, you're almost in fight mode, right? Like, you're like, no, like, I'm in warrior mode right now and I'm trying to dominate something. And that's not, it's to your point earlier, it's not fair to the people you love. Now, we're talking about romantic partnerships, but also, you know, when the little bambino comes and it's like, I don't care what you're doing. I want to hug. Yeah. I want to sit on your lap. I know you're in a private session, but I want to climb up on you right now and kiss on you and just hug you and love you and have you tickle me. And then when that little person is 7 and needs a different level of softness from you, and when they're 15 and need you to see their softness in a different way and respect that they're growing, you as in all of you listening, including me, because I have been in business with my kids being young, my company's 12 years old. It was very hard for me to pay attention to what they were non-verbally communicating with me, because I was in warrior mode. Like, I'm fighting for you. And they're like, I need you to pay attention to me because there's another fight happening back here. And right now it's with the way that I see you seeing me. And that's very important on so many levels. So thank you for just sharing that space of looking back and seeing the shame spiral and all the things that were going on that actually get to be the blessing, that is the lesson that you have for that won't allow you to go back, even if you're playing with fire with, you know, a productivity schedule and having a lot on your plate for that day. Which leads me to, I know that you love your permission for peace and for powering down and for relaxing, but when you think about it specifically, is there one intentionally selfish thing that's just yours that you claim when you're creating space for yourself and you're just like, this is mine, this is my time. Forever lover, I love you, but you can't have this. Best friend, I love you, but you can't have this. What's your thing that hopefully you don't lose once you become enmeshed in mothering? But what's your one intentionally selfish thing that you would like to share with everyone?
It's a slow morning, which I anticipate is going to have to change. Ooh. But I've been planning, like, maybe after my kid goes to daycare, once that starts, then I can build that in, because my slow morning, you know, I make breakfast, I sit with my coffee, I scroll or I read a book or I do a movement, whether that's yoga or walk or weights, like what calls me that day and it's not so planned out. And there's like an hour and a half of time. So maybe I'll have to take a little bit of time off that. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But I find that the slowness in the morning, and it feels like it fuels me. It just sets me up for me to be energized for the rest of my day, to give to my clients, to do my work, to feel like I had something for myself. Yeah. So a slow morning is my selfish time, I would say.
Oh, I really, really like this. And as you're talking, I'm like, I don't know that I would have qualified my morning as slow. But it is. Like, my power up is actually not this rigorous jump out of bed, run to the Peloton. Like, it's definitely, it's tea, it's calming, it's walking around, I'm refilling this, checking the dog bowl. Like, I'm, you know, very ease in my day. But thank you for giving me some framing around that, because it's that slow, I don't know. I feel ease. I hear ease when you say slow, but like, I think there's something beautiful about permission to slow down. Like, there's something gorgeous about it.
It's the ease, right? Because so many years of my life, the alarm would go off. I'd jump out of bed. I'd have a shower. I'd probably drive through, get breakfast somewhere. I was doing 15 things. There was no slowness. There was no ease. There was no grace. It was not fun. It was not playful. It was like to the next destination. And my nervous system's already vibrating, and it's not even 8 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
Whereas now my nervous system, if it gets vibrating, it's somewhere later on in the day. But like, you know, I started my days in this hectic, overwhelmed stress where I was already anxious. And it was really hard to give to people and be kind to people and be empathetic to people from a place of high nervous energy.
Yeah, that's real. And in the medical clinical field, you see that a lot, right? Like, people just don't have spaciousness to really hear the other person. Yeah. They can fix a problem, but sometimes people don't want you to fix as much as they want you to hear. And I'm speaking to all of the lovely, awesome people in my ecosystem that are physicians, because we know that that is huge. You got 7 minutes or less with your patients. And yes, they do want the medicine. They want you to tell them the diagnosis and the prognosis and what's going on. But sometimes when my mother in love is going to the doctor, she just wants, you know, and she's in her late 70s. She just wants to be heard, right? Like, there's, you know, all different layers to that. And I know when we're in these life or death situations, when marriages and families are feeling like this is it, this, if you don't come and fix this is over. And when you're in hospitals and emergency rooms, if you don't fix this is over. Like, when people are really in that, we as the helpers start to mirror that same energy, but that's not always what's needed. So you being brave enough and bold enough to do your own work and make sure that you create that intentionally selfish time for yourself when you have the most control, which happens to be in your morning. Mm-hmm. That makes you a really potent human in my book.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Amber, you've been amazing. And I could talk to you all day, because you know that we have done this before on the other side of the couch when I was on your show, Relationship Psych, which is an amazing podcast, guys. Hint, hint, make sure you subscribe to that after you finish subscribing to this one to get those notifications. But where else can people connect with you?
Yeah, so the most frequent activity you're going to see from me is on Instagram. So that's at Amber Relationship Psychology. So here's a confusing thing. My name is Amber with an A, but my Instagram, my website is Amber with an E. We thought it was like a play off my name. It's just turned out to be quite confusing, but here we are. So my handle is Amber Relationship Psychology with the E. And then on my website, www.emberrelationshippsychology.com. If you head over there, we've got free guides, link to the podcast, blogs, all sorts of things where people can get more information. But yeah, if you want to see me, I'm mostly on Instagram. But that's where I'm going to show up. That's where you're going to get more of me anyways.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I get it. Ember, igniting the sparks of your relationship and your love and your intimacy and the peace. I get it. It makes total sense.
That's why we chose it. It just turns out that people now call me Ember, and then, or people go Amber, and I'm like, this turned out to be confusing. Great idea we had, but it has become confusing.
Yeah. If your name was Lisa, you wouldn't have this problem, right?
Totally.
That is so awesome. Thank you again for visiting us, for coming to play, for sharing your perspective on what a lazy overachiever that is successful can look like, and honoring your story from where you began at 23 all the way to where you are now, about to be embracing that mommy and me stage of life. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. Everyone, thank you so much for showing up and playing with us. I want you to resist the urge to rush and work a little less, you know, being smarter. I try not to say smarter and harder, that whole phrase, but it is real, right? When we think about how much we feel like we have to do, all these check boxes that need to be X'd off, when really it's embracing a little bit of laziness and honoring your need for rest, work less, and I'll say trust your inner brilliance a little bit more, because your inner brilliance is really telling you where you need to go. You might not have the incentive of not having a car to be led to your future self, but you do have an incentive of intuition telling you that there's a new space for you to be in, and you can do it without going into an anxious meltdown. I'm Nikita Rin-Thigpen, and I look forward to seeing you on the other side.